I think I had the mic on when I burped just a minute ago. I thought that was going to be off camera, but apparently not. Hey, I'm going to adjust this real quick. What's going on, everybody? Christmas is like a week away. Week and one day, right? It's on a Wednesday this week, I think. I hope you got everything done. Got all your presents bought and all your gifts wrapped. Mine are not all wrapped because they're not all here yet. I've ordered everything, I think. I think everybody's covered, and I've been wrapping stuff as it comes in, but there's stuff I've ordered that hasn't come in yet, and getting a little nervous about some of it. But nonetheless, hey, welcome back to the show. Now, last Friday was Friday the 13th, and I didn't do a show. I haven't been doing shows on Fridays, and I thought, you know, it's Friday the 13th, maybe I should. But then I thought, no, I don't really have anything to talk about. There's nothing really Friday the 13th related to get into. There's nothing new from Friday the 13th that I really need to discuss. And I've covered the movies on several different podcasts. You can go back several incarnations of this show from the days when it was strictly audio to The Weekend is Dead when I was doing that show and certain things like that. I've talked about all the Friday the 13th movies many times. So I just thought there's no real reason to go over it again and... So I just decided not to do a show, and then guess what comes in the mail on Saturday? My first Christmas gift of the season from Nick Ochoa sends me this. This is the Mezco 112 Friday the 13th Part 3 Jason Voorhees. So, Well, I didn't have any time to do the show anyway, so I wouldn't have been able to cover this on the episode of the show. So, I mean, at least, you know, I didn't fail to do something in that sense. But nonetheless, I do have something here now, so we will talk about this a little bit today as we take a look for it. This is not a toy for children. This is intended for adult collectors only. So take that, Copa. So we will get it. Actually, let's set this back over. So we'll get into that in a bit. But of course, it is Tuesday, so we're going to talk about new comics coming out today. And there are a handful of comics that are coming out next week, which I'll probably do a show next week. Probably won't do one on Christmas, but maybe Christmas Eve. Maybe Christmas Eve Eve. Next week, so the comics this week, your local comic book shop, when they get their boxes of comics for this week, they are also going to get all the comics that come out next week. And that's just because of shipping is crazy because of the holidays and whatever. And so there's about 20 books, I believe, coming out next week. There are none from DC, I believe, and a handful of Marvel and then some indie stuff. So we might talk about that a little bit. But I'll cover those more in detail next week, week of release. There are some things this week, though, to cover, and so let's go ahead and take a look at some of the comics that are coming out this week. Am I at the top? I'm not at the top. Here we go. All right, so Image. Let's see. Family Tree, Farmhand, Hardcore Reloaded, Heart Attack, Middle West. No, Outpost Zero, Pretty Violent. Project Xmas, Top Secret. What is this? And then we got these junk books down at the bottom. But what is this thing? Oh, Mark Millar and Netflix. Sequel to one of the most beloved Millar Ward projects since the dawn of time. Huh. Yeah, well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. What would it be? The most beloved? Because, I mean, the most beloved is probably Kick-Ass and Hit-Girl and... Kick-Ass had a series that I think just ended, right, a couple months ago, and Hit-Girl has one going on now. I know Super was that one with the super criminal guy. So maybe it's something in regards to that. But I don't know. The last Millar World book that I read that I really enjoyed was Space Bandits. That one, I can honestly say, it really felt like it was Mark Millar trying to tell people how they should really handle female characters. It was smart. They were strong. They were independent. But it made it very clear that there are differences between men and women. And it did a really good job of portraying the characters in a very realistic way, without mocking anybody, without, you know, it wasn't like girls rule, and it wasn't like, you know, girls be subservient to men. It really did a good job of portraying things the way they should be and allowing the story to be female-centric and not look down upon them. It's hard to describe without getting into it, but listen, if you can get the issues of Space Bandits, I would highly recommend that you read that series. And it was also a fun, great story. The criminals on the run, and that kind of thing. So, all right, back to, but still, what is this? I don't know. I'll find out later, I guess. All right, so Dark Horse, Count Crowley, no. Vox Machina, no. Invisible Kingdom, I've heard some people say Invisible Kingdom's pretty good. I don't know, maybe I'll try it at some point. American Gods, Skull Digger, and Skeleton Boy. Mm-hmm. Strayed, Tales from Harrow County. Yeah, Witchfinder. Oh, there's a Witchfinder. All right, IDW, G.I. Joe, GLOW, Magic the Gathering, Marvel Action Classics. Oh, I don't remember if it was IDW. If it came out through IDW, if it came out through Marvel, I don't remember. But there was a book last week. It was the Marvel. It was an Iron Man book, and I thought it was the Marvel Marvel Action, but it wasn't. It was listed as like Marvel Adventures Iron Man or something like that, which Marvel Adventures used to be the youth line, but now it's Marvel Action. But apparently they were using that just. It's like a prequel to the upcoming Avengers video game. And it was centered around Iron Man, and it was set in that video game universe. So similar to what they've done with Spider-Man, with the PlayStation 4 game, and that universe, they were doing that for the upcoming Avengers game with Iron Man. So I was mistaken. It was a book in that game reverse. So there you go. I will definitely come clean about that. All right. Let's see, Marvel Action Spider-Man, Mountain Head, Narcos, Read Only Memories. Ooh, Star Trek Motion Picture Facsimile Edition. It's expensive. It's a $5.99 facsimile. And here's the thing, though. They sent out a review PDF. We always get review PDFs from a lot of these companies. You know, years ago, they actually used to send out paper copies, and that was nice. You actually had real comics that you could read and add to your collection, but now they send out PDFs, and they sent out a PDF for this, and I don't know if I can really show it on camera or how much I'm able to show. I'll just I don't know. Yeah, I probably shouldn't, because it's all watermarked. It says do not distribute, review purposes only, whatever. So but basically it's a reprint of the comic book adaptation from Marvel, but they say facsimile edition, but it's not a facsimile edition. So it reprints the... Okay, so first of all, the cover. You got the cover, and that's good. You open it up, and there's some promotional photos. Then you have the title page, which has another promotional photo. It says December 1979, and it talks about, the motion picture, the phenomenon, touching base with reality, Star Trek motion picture glossary. And then you get an ad for the new Marvel Action Comics from IDW. So it's not a facsimile edition. Then you go to the inside, and of course they've covered up everything that said Marvel. They put a whole new section at the bottom, including the thing for IDW. But it's not like wherever it said Marvel, they just put IDW. There's a thing saying, you know, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Tumblr, Instagram. That's not how you do a facsimile edition. That's not how that works. So then you read through, you've got the comic book adaptation, and you're like, okay, well, that's neat that has that. And then you've got Star Trek The Phenomenon, which is the column. I don't know what you'd want to call it, but it basically talks about how fans of the series never let it die, and then it came, and now it's back as this movie. It was going to be this TV show, Phase 2. Touching base with reality, an interview with Jesko von Puttkamer, science advisor to Star Trek The Motion Picture. So they've reprinted that. The glossary they've gone through, and you know they've named the different characters and the different ships, things like that. So if you weren't familiar with Star Trek back in the day and you're going to go see the motion picture, you have that stuff. So, I mean, that's cool. But then on the back cover, it's join the crew of the USS Enterprise on their final voyages. Star Trek Year 5 from IDW. This is not a facsimile. The whole point of the facsimile editions is to get the period... period accurate advertisements and letter columns and in-house ads, and they've kind of followed that a little bit by giving you the extra stuff. It's not just the movie adaptation, it has the extra, you know, columns and whatever on there, but this is not a facsimile edition. This is just a modern reprint. This is more in line with like those dollar comics that come out from these different companies. So, I don't know. I was a little disappointed when I saw how that actually played out, because that was the type of thing. I love the facsimile editions, and I love, you know, being able to look at all those old ads and everything, but that is not what that is. And again, it's expensive at $5.99. Star Trek Picard, number 2. I should have read this. Dang it, I should have paid more attention to what was sitting in the folder. I should have read that so we could talk about it today before it came out. But whatever. I did enjoy, you know, reading the first issue. So it'd be interesting to see if this one is still able to hold up. But, yeah, it is what it is. We've got Year 5, Star Wars Adventures. Ooh, excuse me, sorry. It's right now, it's 2:30 in the afternoon, and I'm still drinking coffee. Trying to wake up. There's just been so much stuff going on for the past few days. The Holotimes is a rough days. Yes, the Holotimes is a rough days. All right, so DC. We've got our Aquaman, Basket Full of Heads, Batman 85. It is over, finally. This Tom King garbage run is done. And this is buried and gone. Oh my goodness. And it's $4.99, extra-sized epic finale. I wonder how many pages this actually is. I don't know. Stunning conclusion to City of Bane. What will become of Gotham Girl now that she's betrayed all she knows? How will the Bat Team cope without Alfred? Will Catwoman stick around? I don't care. It all leads to the new Batman and Catwoman series, which again, I am not going to be reading. I am done with Tom King on Batman. I do not care anymore. It's over, and I'm ready to move on. Batman Last Night on Earth, Batman Superman 5, which, I've been buying these just because it is a multiverse tie-in, but I really don't care about the Batman Who Laughs. We got this Year of the Villain stuff. We've got these heroes, and I have not read. I don't know if any of you guys have been reading any of these specials about the Infected with Blue Beetle, Shazam. Who is that? John Constantine. I don't know. Anyway, I've not been reading... Supergirl, I know, is one of them. I have not been reading them. I did buy the Shazam one. I've got the Supergirl one. I thought maybe I'd get to them at some point, but I still haven't, and I don't know if I will. I'm just not... I don't... This Year the Villain stuff just hasn't captivated me. I don't know what it is, but there's something about it, and I guess part of it is that you know it's not going to stick, right? You know it's never going to really bring any real changes to the characters. But I think it's got to be more than that, because if that's all it was, then why read any of the comics? Because nothing really happens that really matters anymore, right? But there's just something about, I think, the way it built up and the way it pushed as them really wanting you to know, like, this is a big deal. You got, and it just doesn't feel like there's anything big deal about it. There's nothing... It doesn't feel like it treads anything really new. I don't know. There's just something about the Year of the Villain stuff that's just not doing it for me. And I don't know. I can't explain it. Catwoman, Dollar Comics, The Flash 164. What was Flash 164? Reprinted to coincide with The Flash Volume 11, The Greatest Trick of All. Well, okay, but Flash 164. So that's a Geoff Johns. Oh, or it's not. It's with a new... No, okay, it's this one. All right. I was going to say. Flash 164. Okay. Wonderland Chapter 1. Flash wakes up in the Keystone Police Department and he's being handcuffed for the murder of a police officer. He tries to escape but realizes he no longer has super speed. The 10th anniversary of Aquaman's death. He comes to... He's in a holding cell. He is delusional, not a superhero. Questioning his own sanity. Okay. All right. I don't remember this story. When did this come out? 2000. Okay, well, that explains it. September 1st, 2000. So, just for frame of reference, yeah, 2000, I got married in May of 2000. 2000, 2001, 2002, in that time period was Illinois sucks, okay, for a lot of reasons. But one thing that's really terrible is the marriage tax. When you get married, suddenly you pay a lot more in taxes than you did as a single person. It really doesn't make any sense. And then you have kids. Then once you have kids, then your taxes go way back down. 2000, we got married. 2000, I remember 2001, especially 2002, we owed money to the IRS, which we hadn't done before. This was during that time period, like, we had no money, like, super poor, just got married, lived in it was my apartment that my wife moved into, and the apartment was the second floor of somebody's house that got converted into apartment. So you had a living room, and then the hallway was the kitchen. The hallway went to the bedroom in the back, and then off to the side of the hallway was the bathroom. And that was it. Like, it was technically four rooms, but really three, because the kitchen was the hallway. It was small. It was tiny. We were poor. We had nothing. So that's when this book came out. So I may pick this up. Just because I'd never read the story when it came out. I never went back to it. I don't know. Maybe I'll... Well, I probably won't buy the trade. I mean, let's just be fair there. I won't... If I go to read... I may go in Comixology and buy the rest of the issues that make up that story, but I'll probably try out that. Okay, Doomsday Clock, finally. Doomsday Clock is finally ending. But... Here's the problem. I don't know. DC is pushing in 2020 for what they're calling the 5G initiative. And 5G, it means five generations. And it's basically redoing, streamlining the entire history of the DC universe, similar to what happened after the original Crisis on Infinite Earths. If anybody remembers that time period or you've ever gone back and read those books, DC is going to... I don't know if they're going to get rid of the multiverse, but they're at least going to streamline things so that the Silver Age or Golden Age JSA characters, the ones that have been appearing in Doomsday Clock, Johnny Thunder and Captain Midnight and Dr. Fate and all of those people, they will come back into the regular universe canon as having been heroes in the 40s and 50s. Superman will actually be an older character. He will be someone who was a superhero back in those times. Then when the 50s came, the Red Scare, the registration of superheroes, all that kind of stuff that DC has in their history in the past, then the characters disbanded, they all went away, Superman stopped being a superhero, or at least he stopped being public about it, and that's going to be part of 5G. And then, Batman comes along later. The 70s, superheroes kind of start up again. The characters, the idea is the characters that we know, Flash, I can't even think, Wally West Flash, Bruce Wayne, being Batman would have been Batman in the 70s. So in the 90s, when we get Wally West Flash, that's when we get, I don't know if we're going to get like Dick Grayson as Batman. I'm not sure if they're just going to have Batman be older at that point in the 80s. Hal Jordan as Green Lantern will be in the 80s. And all of that stuff, or 90s, 80s, 90s, somewhere in there. But then the idea is now in modern time, 2020, there's going to be new superheroes. So you're going to have new, younger people taking on the roles in the modern day of the DC Universe. And the problem is, though, it hasn't been very clear how all of this is going to play out as far as what you're going to read as a comic. Are they going to do Bruce Wayne comics set in like the 70s and 80s? Or is he just going to be an old man in the new modern ones? How long is this going to last? Is this, you know, is this going to spiral out of Doomsday Clock? Is Doomsday Clock leading up to this happening? Or is this the type of thing where, you know, it's just going to last for a year, kind of like what they did with Secret Wars in the Marvel Universe a couple years ago? And then everything kind of snaps back, kind of a flashpoint deal with that again. Like, I don't know. All I know is the whole point of the multiverse and the whole point of playing with the timeline and doing the crisis and all that stuff is so that every so often you can refresh your characters so that you can have Bruce Wayne still be Batman in 2020, and it works and it makes sense, and it makes just as much sense as Batman being Batman in 1984, in 1972, in 1963, in 1957, because you can refresh the timeline by doing this crisis and just snap everything into place in the modern era. I don't like the idea of replacing these characters, and the argument that's usually made is DC did this in the 60s. Right? This is where the DC characters came from, because you had a Green Lantern and a Flash and a Blue Beetle. Well, that was Charlton, but you had classic versions of these characters in the Golden Age, and they reinvented them in the Bronze Age. You had a new Flash, you had a new Green Lantern. Suddenly you had a younger Batman. You had a younger Superman. But the counter argument to that is that those characters ended up coming back. I mean, it was only a few years after they started to make these changes that they started doing this Justice Society, Justice League, interdimensional crossover stuff, which led to the idea of the multiverse and led to the idea of these characters. They're still alive, they're still active, they're just in a different time, in a different universe. If DC is going to use Doomsday Clock as a way to push for new, younger characters, they have to understand that there's going to be a pushback to bring back those original characters, because that's always kind of been the way in the DC Universe. If you remember when they tried to get rid of Hal Jordan and bring a new Green Lantern with Kyle, I want to say Kyle Reese, but that's Terminator, Kyle Rayner, it didn't last. You know, it went 4 years, really, until they redeemed Hal Jordan, and then it was a couple more years and he was back to being Green Lantern. And now Kyle Rayner, he became the Ion, and then he disappeared. Like, I don't even know where he's at anymore in continuity. I see big problems if they try to do a momentous shift. Now, one thing, we do have this cover here. This is the, I think the Midnight Retailer variant or whatever. And here you see Superman defeating not Captain Atom, even though it's supposed to be Captain Atom. It's not Captain Atom. It's Dr. Manhattan. I don't know. I'm wary about this. But I will say, I did make a bet with Agent 70 on the Comic Book Chronicles. He said there's no way Doomsday Clock is going to be finishing in 2019. And so I took him up off on the bet. And so we bet a gentleman's bet of $1 And so, assuming I go to the comic book store tonight to sort through the stuff for this week, and assuming that it's there, he owes me a dollar, which I will gladly take by PayPal. All right. We've got Flash Forward, which I'm still torn on this. I hated Heroes in Crisis, and this I've heard this kind of retcons a little bit of Heroes in Crisis, and just says that Wally West was kind of going crazy because of the Dark Universe bleeding in and him, you know, trying to fight for his place within the time stream and whatever, but I don't know. Harley Quinn stuff, don't care. He-Man, the Masters of the Multiverse, I still haven't read number one. I still have number one sitting in my read pile. Still haven't read it. Infected, the Commissioner, nah, I'm going to pass on that. Hellblazer, Joker, Killer Smile. I did read number one of Killer Smile, but it was not... Here was the basic premise. So Joker is, again, he's arrested. He's in Arkham Asylum. He's got some caseworker, whoever, that's going to come in and try to, you know, help him supposedly become sane or whatever. And so this guy is trying to get into Joker's head and try to figure out who this guy really is and why he does what he does and what he really believes. And then he starts having these mental breakdowns. He's having visions of the Joker being other places, of his family being murdered. It looks like he's starting to go crazy because he's spending so much time with the Joker. And it's okay. And it's too bad because it's Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino, or Andrea, like it's a dude from Italy, so I'm not sure if it's pronounced like Andrea or Andrea, or I don't think it's Andrea and Andrew, I don't know, but anyway, I don't like these oversized Black Label books. It's 8.5 by 10.875. They make it this weird shape so it doesn't fit into comic boxes, doesn't fit into Golden Age size. It's got to go into magazine size. I like the artwork. I like the writer, Jeff Lemire, a lot. But I don't know. This book just did not captivate me the way I thought it would. We've got Justice League, and again, part of the Justice Doom War, pushing this story forward, Year of the Villain stuff. And this Year of the Villain leads directly into Year of the Villain, Hell Arisen, number one. And I guess part of the problem with this whole thing that Scott Snyder and James Tynion have been setting up in this book, there's so much of... If you read Final Crisis, if you remember Final Crisis, Doomsday finds the anti-life equation and he starts to turn all the people on Earth evil, and the heroes are fighting back. Batman dies, there's whatever, a bunch of stuff happens, and so Superman has to find a device to play a song or sing a song. I forget what it is, but it's like music. He has to play this music in order to undo the anti-life equation and reset the universe. And it was one of those things where you have to just buy the premise or you don't, because it's not really explained. You just, okay. And that's the problem I have with this story going on in Justice League, because so much of it is built around, like, the people either believe in justice or they believe in doom. And so doom has won out, and so there's this giant sigil of doom over the sky. And so the heroes somehow have to get the people to re-believe in hope. And if they can believe in enough hope, then they can undo the doom. And it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't, I don't buy it because it's not explained, right? It's just, this is what happens. There's a sigil, and if enough people believe in doom, then everything goes doomy. Okay, I guess, great, but it doesn't make sense. Like, where do you go with that? It doesn't mean anything. So, not a big fan. Anyway, like, I like the ideas of the multiverse stuff coming back into play. That's kind of a decent cover, Tony Daniel. But I don't know. I'm not buying it. I'm having a lot of problems with it, and I don't know. When it ends, I don't know if I'm going to continue on with the series. Okay, so we've got The Last God, which nobody cares about. Legion of Superheroes 2. I read the first one. I didn't really care. I read the Action Comics stuff, that or Superman Comics, whatever it was, that led up to it. Didn't really care. Read the special. Didn't really care. Read issue number one. Didn't really care. And this is coming from someone, you have to remember, years ago, when I was in high school, one of my goals was to read all of the Legion of Superheroes. Okay, so we're talking in 94, 93, 92, 93, 94, in that time period, I was buying every back issue of Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, Legion of Superheroes, Adventure Comics, Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, like whatever. Like, I read all of that stuff. If I couldn't afford the actual issues, I got the reprints. I had some of the hardcovers that they used to put out back in the days. They reprinted the first four books from, were they from Adventure? They reprinted them as Legion of Superheroes 1, 2, 3, 4, and they were Silver Age size. They were slightly bigger. Had the Legion of Superheroes banner on the front. I bought those. I still have some of them. I loved the Legion of Superheroes. Ever since they did Zero Hour and they killed the timeline, and actually kind of a little before that, when they did, I was fine when they did like the 5-year jump forward, Great Darkness, whatever. And then the universe reset because Mordru like had taken over and had changed all of reality. And so then someone sacrificed themselves in the magic ritual, I forget what it was, to break his spell in the universe. And then the timeline went to reset and it was fine. But then like a year later or a year and a half later, then suddenly they found like clones of all the original legionnaires like on the moon or something. And so all the clones like were brought back to life. So suddenly you had two books. You had Legionnaires where they were young and Legion of Superheroes where they were older, but they were both running around at the same time. And then the Dominators blew up the moon and then they started to destroy Earth. And it was like once they brought in the young ones, I was done. And then before that, a little after, I'd say probably second or third year after they rebooted, they started to get, the writers had an agenda that they put ahead of their storytelling. And it's part of the problem of what we have with comics today, where so many people, they're not trying to entertain you. They're trying to change your mind on something. And it, to me, that makes it not entertaining. It's one thing if you have an entertaining story and the entertaining story can lead you somewhere. I don't want to say Schindler's List. I think that's a little too, that pushes a little too hard one way. I'm trying to think if there's an easier example I can think of, but I can't really think of one offhand. But there was a quote I ran across yesterday. And it said, comedy with an agenda is not comedy. Because it's not trying to make you laugh, it's trying to change your mind. And that's how I feel about a lot of this stuff. You're not, people who have an agenda, they sit down with an agenda and then they try to fit action or adventure or comedy or whatever into their agenda. And the problem is, it doesn't serve their agenda, right? Comedy doesn't serve an agenda of trying to make you feel bad for somebody. Let's go back for a minute. I love the Night of Living Dead movies, right? The George Romero stuff. You watch the first one and you've got cannibal zombies eating other people, all right? And it's gory and it's cool. And you've got this racist white guy who's hiding in the basement, and then the black guy upstairs, and they don't get along, and they argue, and whatever. And so there's like some racial tension thrown in there, but the racial tension is not the focus. It's something that's happening, because the focus is cannibal zombies are trying to eat everybody. You get to Dawn of the Dead, and you have, you know, the shopping mall. You know, the idea of the zombies walking through the mall, they look just like regular people that are trapped in the consumerism, whatever. And you can throw that in there, and that's a part of the story, but the story is the group of people are trying to survive zombies. Then you get to Day of the Dead, and Day of the Dead tries a little too hard to push the government control, the military is bad, you know, people with guns can't be trusted. The only way that humanity is ever going to survive is by going to an island and making babies and whatever. And it tries too hard, and the movie doesn't work as well as the others, because the focus was not entirely on these are the people trying to survive the zombie apocalypse. It becomes this message, and the message pushes harder. Then you get into Land of the Dead and Diary of the Dead and Village of the Dead and all the stuff that he made, you know, in the last 15 years before he died. And they're terrible. They're not, like, I liked at the time, you had the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which was that, I don't remember, was that Snyder or Michael Bay? I forget who it was, but Running Zombies, always hate Running Zombies. So we had a slow walking zombie movie in Land of the Dead, and I was like, great, I like that better. But when you go back and rewatch it and really look at it, it's not a good film. Because again, it tries too hard. These are the haves, these are the have-nots, these are the rich, these are the poor. And the zombies are just kind of there in the background. And it's the problem I have with The Walking Dead for a long time, the comic and the TV show, where it's just like the zombies that appear are just more of a nuisance that have to be dealt with sometimes, as opposed to being the focus of the show. And that was a problem I had with the Legion of Super. This is a long aside. Like, I've gotten way off track here with what we were talking about. But that was a problem I have, and that's a problem I have with a lot of the comics today. That really is the problem, because when you're setting out to serve an agenda and then trying to make the medium fit that agenda, you've given up on the entertainment aspect. It's not entertaining anymore. You're trying to serve an agenda, and you're hoping it's entertaining enough that people pay attention. Be entertaining. Just be entertaining. And if you're someone who doesn't want to see slavery or oppression or violence, then that will come through in your entertainment. But that doesn't mean that the entertainment has to be the focus on that, because once it's the focus, then it loses the entertainment. And you can go back and you can look at all kinds of stuff throughout history, of the history of television and movies, where somebody, they definitely felt one way or another about something, but it wasn't the focus of the entertainment they were producing. It just found its way in here and there. Someone would say something, someone would act a different way. And so you had the ability to make inroads with people and to talk to people and to discuss things. You know, like, I'm not trying to be offensive. You know, I'm just, this is the way people talk. But it becomes offensive because people choose to be offended by it. You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, just let the entertainment be entertainment, and then hope that some of the personality leaks through, right? Because that's how you're going to open dialogue with people and change things. All right, but I digress. Legion of Superheroes, not excited. Lola Woods, I have no idea what that... Oh, that's a Joe Hill, yeah. Metal Men, no. Nightwing, no. Scooby-Doo, no. Shazam, this book is so late. I can't care about it anymore. It's just taking so long. New Suicide Squad, number one, not interested. Superman slashes the Klan. That's, again, trying too hard. Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, Teen Titans, Wonder Woman, Dead Earth. Oh, yeah. This is an oversized, yeah, Black Label. This is their Black Label one. Again, I wish Black Label wasn't doing that size. I would like it so much more. We got Wonder Woman Giant. We got Year of the Villain. Oh, here's that special spinning out of Justice League. Who can stand against the Batman who laughs? Who cares? But at least it says the finale begins here, so maybe we don't have much more to worry about with that stuff. All right, so jumping over to Marvel Comics, we got 2099 Omega. So I don't know if this is actually the end of the run of Omega of 2099 books or if something's going to continue. I don't know. Agents of Atlas, Amazing Spider-Man, Annihilation Scourge, Avengers, Black Panther, Conan, Serpent War, Daredevil, Eternals. Ah, here's a facsimile edition. Eternals number one. Yep, definitely I'll buy that. Eternal Secret of the Marvel Universe, meh. Excalibur, Fallen Angels, Future Foundation, Ghost Spider. Oh, wait, Fallen Excalibur. That's right. This is the week Marvel is releasing, I think, all the X-Men books, right? So we've got Excalibur, Fallen Angels. There's a Marauders. Yep, there's Marauders. Then we go, do we jump down to, there's X-Force. Oh, but not X-Men. Okay. So we're getting all the X-Men books except X-Men are coming out this week. So those of you that read those books, be prepared to pay out the butt for all of those books. Future Foundation. Hey, Philip.
Yeah.
Are you still reading Future Foundation? You read the first several.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Do you want to keep reading it?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So that is one that my son will still be getting, is Future Foundation. So there's that. Let's see here. Oh, there's Ghost Spider. I believe he reads that one, too. Then we got Guardians of the Galaxy. Gwenpool Strikes Back, number 5. He likes Gwenpool a lot, although he says this series isn't nearly as good as the other ones, but there's that. We've got Invaders, King Thor, there's the Marauders, Marvel Tales Annihilation, which reprints some of the old Annihilation tie-in stuff. Oh, including Daredevil 105. What is 105? I'll have to see that. Oh, Moondragon? I don't know. All right, so anyway, so there's that. There's New Mutants. Okay, that's another X-Men book. We got Revenge of the Cosmic Ghost Rider, which, who's writing this? Dennis Hopeless and Donnie Cates. Yeah, pass. Like, I really liked the stuff with Thanos and Cosmic Ghost Rider and all that stuff early on, but it's gone on way too long, and they've done way too much with this stuff. Let's see, Runaways, Scream, Curse of Carnage, Spider-Man. Ooh, the J.J. Abrams Spider-Man. Now, I do like this one. I've liked this series quite a bit, so I'm looking forward to that. That's been enjoyable. We've got Spider-Man Velocity. This is the gamer universe we were talking about, Gamerverse there. So this is set in the PlayStation 4 game. Star Wars Empire Ascendant, destined for Hoth. Oh, so this is right after Star Wars, before we get into Empire Strikes Back. This is to fill the time in between, and Dr. Aphra is getting thrown into the mix. So I wonder if she's going to appear in the movie in a flashback now that she's in the comics. We got The Rise of Kylo Ren, Tony Stark Iron Man, which has not been any good. And then we got a bunch of True Believers here. There we go. Annihilation, Odin Power. Reprinting Thor. Oh. That's Walt. That looks like Walt Simonson artwork. Is that Walt Simonson artwork? Definitely gonna buy that. Ooh, look at this! Look at this! The Super Adaptoid from Tales from Suspense. I will definitely buy that one. Looking forward to that one. This old Thor, Super Skrull. See, this is the stuff I get much more excited about, and then X-Force. So the bulk of my books this week, it looks like, are gonna be these Marvel dollar reprints that I'll get much more excited about. Okay, Dynamite, Black Terror, Chastity, nothing. Death Defying Devil, nope. Red Sonja, Vampirella, nope. Okay, then we get to Boom Studios. We got Angel, we got Firefly, we got Folklords, Heartbeat, Dark Crystal, Claws, Lumberjanes, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and Once in Future. So again, don't care about any of those. Angela Delmorte, Archie Digest, Belladonna, and a bunch of blacked out covers, which you can see why they don't want to give you those covers on here. Ton of those, nothing. Blade Runner, meh. Bloodshot, no. Cosmo. Now this is interesting. Cosmo. Cosmo, the guys who, Ian Flynn and Tracy Yardley, they did the Sonic comics. My son loved the Sonic comics. Then when Archie lost the Sonic license, basically, I don't know if they gave it up, they stopped paying for it, whatever the deal was. Cosmo became the book that Ian Flynn and Tracy Yardley did to fill the time in between. They wanted to have some sort of story. They wanted to work together, keep doing comics. And then IDW got the rights. Is it IDW or is it Boom? No, it's IDW, right? They got the rights to do Sonic. And so they started working over there, but then they've brought back Cosmo. So again, this is one my kids like because, of course, they like the Sonic stuff. So they like Cosmo, and it seems to be a pretty good book for all ages. Cult Classic. I have loved Cult Classic. This has been a lot of fun. Cult Classic Creature Feature. There was another Cult Classic a year or two ago, which I didn't know existed, so I'm going to have to see if I can find that. But Creature Feature has been super fun. Totally 50s monster movie in an 80s setting feel. If you think of, like, say, the remake of The Thing that they did in the 80s, that was a lot of fun and really good. Or movies like The Gate. I can't even remember. Ghoulies, maybe. Some of that type of stuff. That's what this is super fun. Super good time with that one. Deadly 10 Presents Sorority Babes. Huh. Somehow, I did not know this was a book. Charles Band. Should have known. Full Moon Entertainment. There we go. We got a Doctor Who. We got Eskimo Kisses. We got God Mode, Gung Ho, Infinity 8, Junior High Horrors, Lady Death, Machine Girl. There's just a lot of Rick and Morty, Psycho List, Roku, Shades of Magic. I've heard that this actually sells pretty well. This sells better than I would have thought. New York Times bestseller V.E. Schwab. Writing about Steel Prince. I didn't know anything about this, but apparently this sells well. Along with this book down here, Vampire State Building, apparently sells really well too. And I say really well, meaning better than the 500 copies you'd expect to sell. A store that gets a couple of those copies in can sell them out. So maybe it's time to add a couple extras. Who knows? We got Shapes. We got Show's End. I don't know. Tales of Terror. Okay, Vampire State Building. Ooh, Vark Thing. These Cerebus things have been a lot of fun, and I know a lot of people don't actually like them, but they make some good points in there. We got The Visitor from Valiant. We've got Wolvenheart number 3, which actually sells pretty good. And X-Men number 1 Eastman variant being sold through Cover Press LLC. That's interesting. Clover Press. All right. So they got the rights to do their own variant. So, all right. So that's comics coming out this week, and we had a lot of asides. A lot of asides there, talking about a lot of history of random stuff. So sorry about that. For those of you that just wanted to get through it quickly, at least next week will be quickly because there's not a lot of books. But I'm not going to do a full, like, review, whatever, this, Jason, but we're going to open this up, and we're going to take a look at it. And there's, I see, a little piece of plastic to keep it covered and keep it in good condition. And then this plastic on the box has twisted around here, it looks like. Got scraped up a little bit. So this slipcase cover, we've got Friday the 13th Part 3 on the sides. And then on the back, it shows you all the neat stuff that's in there and some promo shots of how it looks. Now, I have to say, normally the 112 collective stuff, I don't generally go for. I like the smaller size figures. They're easier to display and to store and whatever. And these also have the cloth clothing, which to me makes it feel more like a doll than an action figure. But, you know, I mean, it's... I love Friday the 13th. I love Jason stuff. And I love, this is one of those that has extra heads, extra hands, extra accessories. And I like that. I like being able to customize how it's displayed, how it looks. Although, does this, I think this has a figure stand in it. So that definitely helps. Product care guidelines. With any high-end collectible, care and consideration should be exercised when handling. These are not toys, not meant for children. 112 collector figures are built on a highly articulated underbody and then costume with detailed cloth outfit that is not meant to be removed. So you're not supposed to take the pants off your Jason figure and sneak a peek. So keep that in mind if you happen to purchase one. Alright, so here's our top plastic and our little piece of protective film. And it feels like there is a second plastic tray underneath the first one here. I don't know what this is. Although, do not eat the silica gel. Keep that in mind. Oh, we've got a bunch more accessories. Oh, and there's the stand. Okay, so there behind the figure, there's a round Friday the 13th, and it shows what looks like the shower curtain with the knife coming through in 3D. That's, you can see a round shape on here. This is sitting right underneath. And here they've got an arm to put in so you can pose the figure and it holds it up. And then we've got some extra weapons. We've got the harpoon gun. We've got a wrench. We've got a knife. We've got a butcher knife. We've got a fireplace poker. And then this looks like a plastic bag, actually. Looks like... I want to open this, but I don't want all the stuff to pop out. Like, I don't want the knife and wrench and everything to go flying everywhere. Okay. So yeah, sure enough, this is a Ziploc bag with a little spot on there that you could write Jason Voorhees Part 3. So you can put all the accessories in here so you don't lose them. That is, I have to give them some extra credit on that. Oh, which by the way, Nick Ochoa, who sent me this, he has a whole bunch of these 112 figures that he has done reviews of. We've got the videos edited and ready to go, but he has to do write-ups on them. So once those write-ups are done and he lets me know, then we can start posting them. So keep an eye out for that. So if you like the 112 collective figures or the 112 scale figures, then yes, those are coming. Okay, so big bucks. And I just lost a hand trying to show it to you. Oh no, where'd it go? Oh, there it is. I see it. Okay. Luckily, I have carpet on this hardwood floor. I put a rug down so things don't go flying too far out of here. All right. So we've got a pitchfork with some blood on it. That's nifty. You can also eat a salad with it if you wanted to. We've got the bloody machete, which is Jason's calling card there. And we've got a bloody axe here. So that's nifty. And then the Jason figure himself, pulling him out. I like how he's got kind of the hunchback thing that was a look that the character had. Okay, so right off the bat here, I can see the head. Now, there he is, his head with the mask. And I noticed here in the box, here's a loose mask and another head. And so I wondered, oh, that must mean that this mask doesn't come off then. You've got a second head with a mask. But this does come off. And that is a face only a meth head could love. I love that because he does that shot where he's like looking out the window at her or whatever, and he takes off the mask and she's like, it's you, and she's freaking out. That was cool. So, I mean, looking at the figure, these, if you're not familiar with 112, they, like it said in the write-up, there is a lot of articulation. Like right here at the wrist, I can see there's like a ball joint. So you move the hand around. There's the elbow. Here's the shoulder. We've got the neck. We've got the waist here. There's also some sort of like midsection crunch there, kind of like a Masters of the Universe Classics type of thing. Some sort of crunch there. We've got the hip. We've got a knee. We've got ankle. Moving around. So you can see there's a lot of joints. So it allows you to do a lot of different posing. And I like, I do like three a lot. Like three is one of my favorites of the line. And I like how it's got his just kind of like, I don't know what you'd call it, but his country, old country man clothing, you know, broke into someone's house and got these. It's not like a mechanic's outfit, like you know, Michael Myers always has the jumpsuit from the mechanics, but it is it's a good suit. It looks good. There's a lot of detail on the hands and everything. A lot of detail on the face. So the other hands we have here in the box, we've got two hands in like this little grippy pose, like reaching out for you, coming for you. So that's cool. And then the hand that I originally dropped on the ground, this is the hand for like the harpoon gun. You can see it's got the trigger finger. If I can get it to focus, kind of. But anyway, so you can see that's for that. And then the last hand, it's just kind of reaching out. So there's like the claw hand, you know, like I showed you at the beginning, where it's kind of like grabbing at you. And then this one's like a little more laid back, a little different. That's, I guess, more of a relaxed pose. Whereas the hands that are actually on him are both kind of like the G.I. Joe Kung Fu grip that you can see there. So this head, this other head that's in here is actually, it's behind this piece of plastic. So I couldn't actually see what it was, but I'm guessing, here's an idea. This second mask has the machete wound up at the top in the head. So I'm guessing that this head has a machete wound. And in fact, it does. So there you go. So this head, you can see it's the one that's been cut. I'm trying to move, there we go, so it can focus. So you can see it's been cut and there's blood all over and it's out of focus again. So you have the bloody head there and then the bloody mask. So you can put the mask on top of the head and line up the cuts. And there you go. And so then this you can put on your figure. You can pop off the other head, put this head on there. That is actually pretty nifty. I do like having the interchangeable stuff, again, because it allows you to display it how you want to display it. And the fact that there's a lot of accessories is really nice, because, you know, a lot of times they come, I remember back in the day when, you know, McFarlane first started doing like the horror figures, and you were finally like, yes, we got figures, and you had some sort of stand in the back with like the movie poster, and you're like, okay, well, that's kind of cool. And then it came with like the machete, or maybe the machete and the axe, and like that was it. So, and those were what I like to call with McFarlane toys, those are in action figures, because you can't really do a whole lot with them. They're just kind of in the pose that they're in, and they don't do anything else really. So here is the figure stand. So again, you can take the stand and you take this arm, this telescoping, well, it's not really telescoping, but it's articulated. So you stick the arm onto here, and then put the snap the thing around his waist to put him in whatever pose you want. Or he does have holes on the bottom there, so you can put him directly onto the stand if you don't want him to do any sort of crazy pose. But if he's going to be doing something that's going to throw him off balance, then you can use the arm and you can have him falling down or lunging forward or whatever like that. So I have to say, I do like the look of it. One of the things that's always kind of weird when you have a figure with cloth clothing is you oftentimes have to worry about the sense of scale. in a 3¾-inch figure or a 6-inch figure. You know, everything that's plastic and molded has been sculpted and designed and developed to be, you know, that size. And when you're dealing with a character that's small but cloth, it's kind of similar to when they do special effects in movies and they have water. Water is always water, right? So no matter how big or how small it is, it's always going to look the same. And that's why it's difficult a lot of times when they make a model of something and then it has to fall into water, because the water, if you have a small model and it falls in water, you can tell that the water is reacting differently than it would if it was big. A big thing crashing in breaks the water up more. You get foam, you get lots of little drops. A small thing going in and it just kind of like bloop and falls in. The surface tension is just too much. Cloth, similarly, it's difficult when you're doing a small character with some sort of cloth. Seams are always going to stand out because you can only get thread so thin and then it just doesn't hold anymore. Then it breaks. And so when you're dealing with a character with cloth clothing, you have to worry about the seams. You also have to worry about things like the collar, because, you know, collars, a lot of times they get, you know, curled up and whatever. There has to be some sort of fluidity to the motion of it. And when you do them tiny, you know, a lot of times they stick out because there's no real weight to them. There's the weave is not small enough in order to give it that same feel. So it feels like what they've done here, when you feel around the collar, it's almost like, I want to say they've put something, some sort of product on it. Almost like, I don't want to say it's a spray glue, because that's obviously not what it is, but that's kind of what it feels like. It almost feels like there's something on it to kind of hold it together a little bit more. It's not loose and floppy like a regular piece of cloth. It has more of a weight to it, which makes it feel, or makes it look more like it's a bigger piece, because the bigger piece has more gravity, it holds down more, it's less likely to fly around. But the seams are still the one thing that you have to kind of worry about. Now, they did, I don't know if I can get this to focus, but they did make buttons. Oh yeah, that's focusing. So you can see the buttons on his shirt has tiny little buttons on there. But again, those seams, the thread can only be so small before it doesn't work anymore. It's pretty good, though. And especially with the tiny buttons, I think that really adds to the look of it. Really adds to the illusion, right? Buying the illusion of what the character is. Now, I'm wondering... Okay, now he's got a belt, and it's pretty good detail on there. So look at Jason's midsection, everybody. Jason's got a crotch, and he's wearing a white undershirt, which you can see poking out through the top, and you can kind of see it under here, and it looks like that's all around the midsection. So it's forever tucked. Now, maybe I could reach down there and pull it out, but I don't really feel like pulling down Jason's pants and playing with his undies to check out his midge. I think it's fine. I think it's fine the way it is, and I'm going to leave it just at that. But the detail is good. The bottom of the boots here, if I can get that to focus. Cover my face, if I can get it. No, they're kind of. You can see... it's got all the tread that a real boot would have there at the bottom, and they've done some dry brushing on it to give it a little bit of that dirty look. So this is cool. This is a cool looking figure. And again, he's got that lumpy head. I love this head from part 3, which, you know, we saw it here. We saw it a little bit in 4, right? And then you don't see his face really again until... Was it 7? When Laura Park Lincoln uses her carry powers and rips the mask off his face. And then we see him again in 8, and it's all like melted and weird looking. This is, you know, the human who grew up and turned nasty. That's him. And that looks cool. I gotta say, those details. That's the type of thing. This is the type of toy that I could. I like to draw. I actually went to school for illustration, but I ended up getting a job later on in graphic design instead of illustration. But, you know, that's how I got into comics. I always wanted to draw comics and that type of thing. I do draw. This is the type of thing you could use, pose it, and draw from because there's so much detail on it. I could definitely see this as being the type of thing where you could set it up and draw from. Because, one, it is kind of like an art doll. I don't know if you've ever seen the poser dolls that artists use. They're just kind of a blank wood thing. And the idea is you put them in a pose and you can draw the basic shape and then you add the details of what it looks like. This, because he's so articulated, because they've got the arm in there that can hold him, you can put him in a pose and have him doing whatever. And it'd be good to draw. So I might actually use this as a drawing tool more than an actual toy. Although, again, I do I do play with my toys. So that'll be something to look forward to. And oftentimes, though, nobody wants to play with me, so I just have to play with myself. That's right, I got a little drum set. Just so I could make that joke. So, dedication. That's what this is about, dedication. All right, this is really cool, Nick. Enrique, thank you. This is the type of thing. I'm gonna do more with it later. I'm going to kind of put it all away just for right now. But later on, I'm going to pull this out and play with some of these hands and these weapons and get them in some different poses. I do have some of the, what are they, Funko? Yeah. Funko does a whole bunch, and they've ended up in retail places like Target, Spencer Gifts maybe. Some of them go through, they go through Diamond collectibles. So I do have some of those figures, and those are good. And again, those are all plastic. But they do have the takeaways that you always have with the plastic ones, where of course the arm is fully molded, and when you hold it like this, it looks fine, but then as soon as you move the arm, it's like the piece of cloth has to break, and you've got the smooth thing. So I do have some of those, not as good to draw from as something like, say, this, because of the detail in the cloth. I will admit, it does make it better for that kind of thing, even though it does feel like it's a doll. And I always give people a hard time about that. Duvall from That New Toy Smell, he always collected the 112 figures, and he we always made fun of him for the dolly clothes. All right. Do I want to exit? No, sorry. Hopefully that didn't glitch. When I set the figure down, I hit a button on the keyboard and the computer started to freak out, thinking I was trying to shut this down in the middle, and I am not. Okay, so show's been an hour and 8 minutes, so it's probably a good time to wrap up, but that's going to do it. That's comics this week, and that's a look at my first Christmas gift of the season. Well, actually, that's not true, is it? Because I got some mugs the other day. Which are downstairs in the dishwasher. I haven't even shown those off. So anyway, nonetheless, though, thank you, Nick Ochoa. That is awesome, and I will definitely be playing with that later. Everyone else, thank you for tuning in. Again, let me know what it is. If there's any other topics you want me to talk about, if you want to talk about the new Ghostbusters, whatever going on. Generally, the idea, if you're new to the show, you haven't watched this before, I want to talk about the stuff that you guys want to talk about. So you got to leave comments or, you know, call our 24-hour voicemail line. Area code 217-953-4025. And you can leave a voicemail message 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or you can send me an email, dirt@popculturenetwork.com or dirt@thepopc.net. Or you can leave it here on YouTube or on, if you're listening to this podcast, on iTunes. I have not been to iTunes in years, so I don't know. If people have been leaving comments on iTunes, sorry, I haven't seen them. But for those of you listening on iTunes or through Podbean, I want to thank you for listening. Don't forget to go to thepopc.net or popculturenetwork.com. It's the same website. We just got two different names. Make it easy to get to. But you can always go there and leave comments, or in the official Facebook group, you can go there, or you know, wherever you feel like it. I want to talk about the stuff that you want to talk about, and so then that way you can tell me I'm wrong and I don't know anything, because that's always a good time. So Not going to ask you to like. I'm not going to ask you to subscribe. I'm not going to ask you to hit that bell. I'm not going to ask you to come to my Patreon, which I don't even have. I'm not going to ask you to share this video. All I want you to do is to remember this one thing.
You're watching the best looking guy on the internet.